Good afternoon. Welcome to each one of you. I hope at quarter after two with full stomachs and the third day into the Institute that you all feel good enough to engage your minds. So there's a test afterward. It's on the back side of your papers. So if you already looked at it, that's fine, but we're going to test you at the end. So be thinking about that. Pay attention to the main points, and you should be able to do well. Does anybody know when Texas became a state?
1865.
Good guess. 1845. California?
1849.
Real close. 1850. Here's something else that I'm going to test you on later. Max Planck proposed the law of radiation. This is what he proposed. A measure of quanta is measured by multiplying the frequency of radiation by a universal constant. Remember that. So today, the lesson is on the seven laws of teaching. We are going to be teaching out of this book, the seven laws of teaching. I'll explain a little bit more about it later. Why would we connect laws with teaching? What does laws and teaching have anything to do with each other? Are our lives currently being driven by laws, or do we get to decide how things are in the classroom? We're familiar with the law of gravity. The law of gravity enabled you to get up here in spite of the fact that you had to overcome it to get up here. If the law of gravity would not exist, we would all vaporize. We're familiar with the law of germination, where if you plant a corn seed, a corn will grow up if you have more luck than what we have in our gardening. So those are laws that we work with, sowing and reaping. How is that connected with the classroom? Well, George Milton Gregory, he looked at teaching and decided that there are approximately at least seven laws, that if you recognize those laws in the classroom, it will help make your classroom a much more effective place. Do we like laws? I learned recently that it was a law in Oregon that you don't fill your own gas tank up, but that someone else does it for you. I learned that a couple years ago. I jumped out and started to pay, and all of a sudden the gas station attendant was there telling me, hey, step back here, I got it. And that was my introduction to the law. I hadn't realized it was a law. I thought it was just a good thing. So we follow laws. Last week we were, my brother and I, we were setting up a block wall, the 8 by 16 blocks. And you build up the corners nice and straight with a level, and that defines how nice and straight your wall is in between them. Masons are governed by laws. Cooks are governed by laws. If you dump the wrong ingredient in, it doesn't matter if you're 99.9% right on all the rest of the ingredients. All it takes is one ingredient to mess the whole thing up, like a little bit too much salt. And pilots are very law-driven. Would you like to ride with a pilot who decides that he can fudge some laws? His plane would empty pretty quickly. And it's that way with teachers. If we as teachers don't recognize that there's certain laws that happen in classrooms, we are going to experience a similar result, chaos and disaster. So as we go through these laws, just hear and absorb them. People used to be afraid that whenever trains came out, that trains could reach like 30 and 40 miles per hour. And there was actually discussions going on, from what I understand, like what would happen to a human body if it attained the speed of 30 miles per hour? And there were all kinds of theories about what might happen to us if we would actually go that fast, like melting or bowels coming out or some of those things that people came up with. So let's stay in the realm of things that we know. George Milton Gregory, as I mentioned, he was very passionate about the art of teaching, and that's why he wrote this book. This is actually the second edition. I wanted the first edition, but I left it somewhere. The only difference that I know of between the two editions is the second one does not have the scripture references in it, which I feel George Milton Gregory would not have liked that edition. I'm sorry?
John Milton Gregory.
John Milton Gregory. Thank you. I was saying George. So if you can get that first edition of book, when you see it, it's more of a gray book. But this one will work as well. You won't have to read far before you see his passion. Take time to meditate on this book and absorb them as you go through your school year. So are you ready to begin our trip? Hold on tight because we're going to cover a lot of ground. The first law is the teacher must know that which he would teach. At first glance, that you might think that's the most obvious statement you've heard in a long time, and hopefully it is. But watch out. I've been caught flat-footed quite a few times at the head of my class, and we're working out some of the oral work in the book, and we come across the sentence in diagramming, and all of a sudden we run into trouble. I don't know how to do this. How are we going to relate to our students if we get caught flat-footed like that? There are four basic levels of knowledge. One is faint recognition, like in this crowd. At least I do that a lot. I faintly recognize a lot of faces. The second one is the ability to generally recall when you meet the person the second time and you can recall their name and state a couple facts about them. The third one is, well, able to explain and prove and illustrate it. I might be able to go tell my friends some stories about you on this third level of recognition. And on the fourth level of recognition, there's a deep appreciation, and it begins to change my conduct as a result. So as we study our lessons as teachers, where along the line are we in those four stages with our ability to recall that information? The author presents five dangers in this thing of knowledge. Each one of these could ruin your career. There's a temptation to feel like the students don't know very much. That's true. And being as I know more than them, things will turn out right. That is a fallacy. Another one is the student is the one who needs to study, not necessarily myself. I can sit back and chill, and as long as I talk fast enough and secretive enough, they'll never find out that I don't actually know what they're doing. Third one is thinking we know enough to get through the period and that we can use other random things to fill it up if we don't. Fourth one, make up fancies of our own and try to hang on to fancies of the general idea of the lesson. And the fifth one, using big words such as glittering generalities. They are blazing ubiquities. Talking to students with great language like that is not going to be effective. Remember, we are talking about the teacher must know that which he would teach. And you find that speakers who resort to using big language often illustrate that they don't know much about their subject. Thorough knowledge leads to enthusiasm. You see someone who despises a subject, probably chances are they don't know much about the subject. If you look up at night, you'll see Orion oftentimes, and it is the constellation of a, looks like a man. He has a belt, he has his right and left shoulder, and he has his legs. And for an average person like me, as I go out and look at the stars, it's awe-inspiring. I enjoy it. It's amazing. I can even look at Orion and see his right shoulder. If you're looking at him, it's his left shoulder over here, whichever way you want to look at it there. Knowing that Betelgeuse is his right shoulder and that it is approximately the fourth largest star that we've discovered. If you were to pit Betelgeuse against our sun, the sun would look like this and Betelgeuse would look like this. Doesn't that give you just a little bit more of a chill? When you're looking up at the night sky and you see this in your mind in comparison to our little sun. It's that way with a lot of the things we teach. The more we know and understand our subject, the more we begin to get these chills running down our spine. If you haven't felt the chills, keep studying. So that is just one example. You'll run into that in all over the place. Vast knowledge usually ends up in spellbound audience. Real quickly, study fresh every time. Especially if you're a long-term teacher, it's easy to feel like, oh, I've studied that 8 times already. Get up in front of class and deliver the same sermon that you've given the last 8 times. Don't do that. Try to have it fresh every time. Compare it to more familiar things. Jonah talks about he used to think a spouse was a furry thing with a long tail, or a long furry tail. We tell our students that a spouse is a wife. They understand what a wife is, but maybe not a spouse. Use clear language to explain yourself. Start with simple ideas and lead up to the complex. Relate the lessons to the students' lives. This lesson here is a little bit like your rabbits. Notice how you got their attention. How is it like their rabbits? Use legitimate aids. We'll get to some of these in a while. I like aids that at face value are attention getting, but you can't figure them out until you talk about them. Intentionally set a time to study each lesson before teaching, studying more than just the basics, and read and ask questions from others to learn about more about your topic. Do you know someone who excels in this field? Give them a call. Let them energize you. So once again, the teacher must know that which he would teach. The second one, the learner must attend with interest to the materials to be learned. Notice the focus changes from the teacher now to the pupil, and you might think, what can I do about a student's interest? You might face the time that your student is sitting there at the class table just counting down the seconds till your class time is over. What can we do about our pupils' interest? If our pupils do not have interest in the lesson, chances are pretty high that they will not learn the lesson. They don't have interest. So it is a requirement for the teacher to understand that, because what are we going to do to develop their interest? A ship at sea is going unguided to be blown all over the place. That's a little bit like your student's interest. If you don't do anything to attract their interest, their minds are going to wander around like ships at sea with no rudder. Our goal with this is a student needs to decide to place his interest there. That is a requirement. But on the flip side, we as teachers can do a lot to attract interest. For example, there are certain things that you can do during class time that pull that interest up out of your student again. So think about ways to be outside of the box sometimes and just grab their attention. 4 things to avoid. Whenever you start your lesson, make sure you have your students' attention. And sometimes it means doing this. Good. We can get started. Don't ever get to the point of completely exhausting your students' attention. Try to change the length of class based on the age of your students. I've heard say that 1 minute per year, that's 1 minute for if they're 6 years old, 6 minutes, 8 years old, 8 minutes, and so on. So set your length of class based on the age of students, you're probably not going to have your sixth graders interested for a 15-minute class. That's going to be very difficult. Make your lesson relevant to the age you're teaching. How many of you have your favorite kitty at home? Anybody want to venture your kitty's name?
Sarah.
Good job. For some reason, there's a resistance to what you're trying to teach when you appeal to the wrong age group with your questions. I don't know how many people would like to admit they have a kitty at home that they love to pet. That might work with your sixth graders, but don't get the point. Know their favorite songs, stories, subjects, etc. Keep distractions in the classroom to a minimum. Sometimes it means walking over there and lowering that shade. And sometimes if you have stuff sitting beside you that you're going to use for class, they have their minds on it, so you can toss it away, so now their attention is on you. Have thought-provoking questions beforehand. Make your presentation colorful, but don't overdo it. If you're expecting to come up to class and you have these amazing demonstrations every 2 minutes, like in Jonah's class yesterday, that's unrealistic to expect that every day, long term. Maintain your enthusiasm. Someone was talking this morning about enthusiasm over direct objects. Remember, the learner must attend with interest to the material to be learned.
Please listen carefully and write this down. Le número tres. El lenguaje utilizado en la enseñanza debe ser común al profesor al alumno. Sorry, not sure back in. So, this might be a lame joke, but sometimes that's what our students are hearing when we're teaching. They don't understand what we're saying. Yes, we're both talking English. We're both speaking English, but there's not a connection there. Let's think carefully. The language used in teaching must be common to teacher and learner. The language used in teaching must be common to teacher and learner. The first law had to do with the teacher. The second law is about the learner. Third law is about the language. The student and teacher must be familiar with the language used. When I started teaching school in Texas, all of my students came from Spanish-speaking homes. They all either had a father or a mother who either couldn't speak English or the English was very difficult for them. And most of these children spoke Spanish at home instead of English. And it was a big hurdle for me to relate to these students. Their vocabulary was extremely limited. English was their second language. In fact, for one, it was their third language. It was Guarani, Spanish and Guarani, and then English, and they came from Paraguay. So it was a challenge to be able to teach. Often when I used a figure of speech, they didn't get it. It's frustrating. I love figures of speech and speeches and idioms and words with double meanings and puns, and it was just like all those tools were no good. The quest for knowledge would simply be the pursuit of an untamed fowl, wild goose chase. One time I seriously offended one of my students because I said something. I guess he misunderstood what I was saying, and it offended him. Use words that are common to them. Listen to them when they're talking. And listen to what kind of words they use and how they use them and what it means to them. Let them discuss the math problem. You need to teach the lesson in their own words. Don't just assume that they understand what you're saying. Students are very good at nodding and smiling and looking like they understand when they really have no clue what's going on. Just because you say, does that make sense? And everyone nods, that does not mean that they understood. Like the little boy who he wanted to see the wicked flee whom no man pursueth. And the little girl who went home and told her mom that they were singing a song, you know, about the dreadful Paul, and she said, yeah, I know, but we have a dreadful Paul in our school. You need to teach the lesson in their own words. Expand their vocabulary, though. Illustrate new words. That's great. But just remember that their vocabularies aren't as expanded as yours are. Please, while you're teaching, please endeavor to curb your desire to exhibit your perspicacity. Use simple words in teaching. Law number 4 says the truth to be taught must be learned through truth already learned. So we have the teacher, we have the learner, we have the law of the language, and we have the law of the lesson. You could say the lesson to be taught must be learned through lessons already known, already taught. Always begin your lessons with review. Review what they already know. If you're teaching about direct objects, just don't start your lesson by explaining what a direct object is. Go back and talk about what a noun is. How do we know what a noun is? And then ask them about action verbs. And review what they already know, and then explain how this connects to the direct object. Always begin the lesson with the familiar, what they know. And then you can progress into new territory. Imagine you're the teacher, and you're leading your students up through the mountains. You know, if there's a chasm there, you can't expect to just jump over that somehow. Maybe you can jump over it, but your students won't be able to. And what happens is you end up on this side, and you're still going, and the students are falling down in the cracks. And they are not with you. So make sure you connect. Sometimes you have to build a bridge connecting the old to the new so that they can stay with you and they can stay connected. The truth to be taught must be learned through truth already known. How would you describe a zebra to someone who had never seen a zebra before?
A penguin on 4 legs.
A penguin on 4 legs? Okay. Yeah, there you go. You know, use something that they're familiar with. I'm sure a horse would be something that, yeah, everyone around here would be familiar with. Your students would be familiar with. But a zebra, they maybe don't know. And, yeah, so you can start with something that they know and then explain the differences. So that's really good. Compare it to something familiar. The truth to be taught must be learned through truth already known. Remember the story in Acts where the disciples were in the upper room? What sound did they hear?
A rushing wind.
Okay. Really? Have you read your Bible? No, you're right. It says a sound as of a rushing mighty wind. It wasn't the sound of a wind, but they didn't have a word to describe it. And so they said, like a wind. What appeared on their heads? Now you're scared to answer.
Tongues of fire.
Okay. Well, was it actually tongues of fire? It says, let me just read this. When the day of Pentecost was fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. This is not the car now. And suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a mighty rushing mighty wind, and it filled all the house where they were sitting. And there appeared unto them cloven tongues like as of fire. There was not, I don't believe there was fire on their heads. Now, I could be wrong, but it was something that looked like fire, and that's the only words they could come up with to explain it. It looked like fire. Explain the unknown with what we're familiar to. Just like in Revelation, there's many examples in Revelation where John didn't know what he really saw, but he just tried the best he could to compare it with what he had. You know, if someone is lost, you know, have you ever had somebody call you on the phone? They're trying to get to your place, and they're lost. Hey, I'm lost. Can you help me? Well, what's the first thing you do? Well, we live right here. Just turn left into our driveway off of Highway 64. No, we first of all, well, where are you at? We first of all have to figure out where they're at, and then we can direct them to our place. We have to start with where they are, and then we can lead them into the place where we want to take them. So the law of the lesson, the truth to be taught must be learned through truth already known.
Right, please get your pencils ready, or pens, whatever you have there. In the upper left-hand corner of your paper, there is a blank space. Please.
Did you run off with a black marker?
I did, I'm sorry.
Students get this.
Are you all able to see this part of the board?
I hope.
I would like you to draw an upside-down egg, more or less. Kind of like that, something to that effect. All right. Please raise your non-writing hand when you're done. Very good. Now, halfway down, I would like you to draw two little curves like that. Right, now, if you can imagine this space being divided into three equal spaces, draw a longer curve down here. And then if we can divide this space into two equal spaces, draw a curve there as well. Now, even with these two small curves on the outside, we will draw a small curve on either side. And now, from this little curve that we made here, we will just simply draw a line to each of those curves. And finally, in between these two curves and this one, we will draw just a short curve right there. Law 5. Teaching is arousing and using the pupils. I think you used exciting, is that right? Is there an E there on your papers? Okay, that's a slightly different word. So that would be exciting and using the pupil's mind to...
Exciting.
Yes, and using the pupil's mind to form in it a desired concept or thought. All right? Stir their curiosity by questioning your students. What did we draw? An egg, right? You'll have students who will answer that question. What did you draw? Anyone?
Your face.
My face? That's missing a beard. All right. Very good. Is it recognizable? Okay, good. With this, this is one of the times when a teacher needs to be introspective regarding their strengths, your strengths. All right? So, for example, there are three basic types of teachers. There are teachers who love their content. All right? These are the ones who say, we have this wonderful lesson to learn today. We are going to learn how to draw faces. Faces are wonderful things to draw, and they're going to focus on what we are learning. All right? This is like the guy who's all excited about direct objects. He loves direct objects. They're just these interesting things that fit into so much of our language and so on. There are teachers who love their relationship. And these are the ones who can tell Kevin, you know, you remember the dog that your family had that died when you were six? Right, even though he's this age right now, they know that because they know Kevin, they love Kevin, and they're going to teach through their connection. They're going to focus. That's how they're going to teach. Right? Those are, by the way, those are both great kinds of teachers. Okay, the third kind of the teacher is a teacher who teaches with charisma. He is or she is an actor. These people are often loud. They typically move around a lot, gesture a lot. Anyway, we'll leave that, okay? Just stop laughing. It's okay. You need to know which kind of teacher you are. And any teacher should use all three methods, basically. But you need to know which kind you are and use that type of teaching to do this. Because it is your job. That is the means by which you are going to excite the student. All right? A very venerable preacher was once speaking at a teacher's meeting. And he was talking about the importance of answering a question with a question. This is one of the things that teachers do that, to excite, get the student's mind working. Right? The student asks you, how many quarts are in a gallon? And you ask them, what do you think? Right? And he said, he was a minister, so he was not one of the teachers there, and he calls out into the crowd, he picks out one of the teachers. Don't you think it's good to answer a question with a question? And the teacher responded, don't you think so? Start them working on a lesson. Because the principle here is that the person working is the person learning. And that is why we started off with you working. I hope you all did something there. Right? If I came up here and drew this wonderful picture, you're not going to get it because you didn't do anything. Did anyone here learn how to walk by reading a book about walking? You raise your hand if you learned how to walk, swim, ride a bike by reading a book or going to a one-week seminar on walking, biking, swimming. Not happening. All right, my dad took me to the end of a pier and threw me off. Stop teaching as soon as your students get it. This is one thing that first-year teachers sometimes have a problem with. When your students are working the concept, they know what to do, and they are on fire for the lesson, shut up. All right? They're good to go. You are wasting your time to keep talking. Find that irreducible minimum and give that to your students and let them go. Catch and release teaching. Law 6. I need a volunteer, please, for this one. Thank you, Nathan. I knew you were a brave person. Would you please come up here? Right. You did draw a face on your paper correctly. Mm-hmm. Okay, now using the same method, would you go to the other side of the board, please? You may erase that in line, whatever this is in the way. And go ahead and draw a face. You willing to do that?
Sure.
Thank you.
The same face?
It doesn't have to be the same one. You can embellish if you like.
Okay.
All right. Because you should, you have mastered this art, correct? Mm-hmm. Good. So, learning is thinking into one's own understanding, a new idea or truth. You see, excellent. Thank you, Nathan. It doesn't do me any good to show you all what a great teacher I am, or my own students that. It's my job to make them do the work. Right, these are two sides of the same coin. It's my job to excite their mind, and it's also my job to make that mind do the work. Right? Cause your students to express the lesson in their own words. All right, Monica, could you tell me the steps in drawing a face that we went through? Could you restate that back to me? How did we do this? What did we start with? What did we do next?
Curves.
But where did we place those curves? This is very important. In the middle. Can you notice a slight difference between the one we did first and Nathan's? Where did he place his curves? Oh. Made a little mistake. That was a good try, Nathan. Thank you for going on. See, now that we're reiterating, now that we have the students discussing this thing, we not only are able to go back through the steps, we can start seeing where we can get off the tracks. All right? But it doesn't do me any good to do all the thinking. I have to get you all involved. Call students to practice the lesson alone. We did that. Nathan came up here. Thank you, Nathan, by the way. That was very brave. Can you think of a time, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about this, cause your students to think. Yeah, students are going to come to you and say, why do we have to learn this? You know what you should say? What do you think? Right? Put it back in their lap. Think of a time when you might need this. when might you need to draw a face? I'm sorry, you all didn't know that question was coming, right? So exercise your minds. When might you want to draw a face? Maybe we would do that. When might you want to draw a face?
In school.
Only in school.
Instructing a novice teacher
trap. Sure. What else?
As enjoyment.
Thank you. It's just fun to be able to draw a face that actually looks like someone, right? And so on. What else?
To entertain your little boy.
So you hear the dad talking. How about, how many of you enjoy books that have pictures? Hand raised. How did the pictures get there? Especially the really good ones. That have white people sticking their thumbs out in these. How did the pictures get there? Somebody had to
draw.
Thank you.
Any of you have a PCR test recently? You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but as a teacher, we would like you to do PCR testing.
All right, the law of review is the last one, the seventh one there. The completion, test, and confirmation of the work of teaching must be made by review and application. Could someone give me that law on radiation that I read at the beginning? Anybody know who it was?
Max Planck.
It was Max Planck. It was a measure of
frequency times constant.
Radiation equals frequency times.
That is very close.
Excellent.
That was very excellent. A measure of quant is measured by multiplying the frequency of radiation by a universal constant. And if that is meaningless to you, that is fine. That is how your students may feel during a direct object class as you're up there trying to show them what a direct object is. That's why it's so important to use these laws to start with what they know and so on. But we must spend a lot of time reviewing. Here's the PCR. This is the purpose. To perfect knowledge. You want to take their knowledge and perfect it. That's the P. You want to confirm the knowledge. Yes, this is correct. What you know is correct. And the last one, the R, is render it ready and useful. That way, when they come into this challenge again, right there it is, ready to be used. Mm-hmm. Texas became a state in?
1845.
We're going to convert 1845 to a clock, 24-hour time, military time. What do we do at 1845?
Go to sleep.
If you're a teacher. We eat supper. Maybe a late one. More specifically, we probably are actually about done with dessert by then at 6:45 in the evening. So picture Texas as a dessert. That it became a state in 1845, or it became a state late into supper time.
Amen.
And 5 minutes later, another state came into existence.
And it was a whole lot better.
Amen. Anybody know what state that was?
California.
California. So if you have a way of review that is engaging, that is engaging and leaves your students with a mental picture. Whenever you see Texas on the map, you're thinking, supper time, 1845. And guess what? 5 minutes later, California joined. So just simple steps like that. As you're doing review with your class, you might state at the beginning of the class, California came in 1850, and that quickly leaves. But that is why it's so important that we spend time in review. It is the review that the retention begins to stick, not the first time through the lesson. You have to be very intentional with your review, especially your history lessons where there's so many dates and facts. There's no way your student is going to walk away knowing all that. So as teachers, if the test doesn't do it for us, we have to decide what do we want that student to get. And then we spend time review until at supper time, they're eating their dessert and they're thinking,
Texas,
California, 645.
They're all moving to Texas.
So you get the concept. Review is about sticking. Whatever it takes. Be intentional about it. There's all kinds of things we can do wrong. We can neglect it entirely. That happened too often for me. We can be inadequate in our review, show up 5 minutes before the test. Oh, by the way, hey, you all need to know, remember this, this, and this. Don't try that. Putting off review till almost the end, and a lifeless, colorless review. If you're up there saying, what year did Texas join? California? Oregon? I suppose enough of that would eventually get the correct answer coming out, but there's ways that bring it to life and make it stick. Review is always in order, and have set times for review. Try to review, as Jonah said, or Derek, in each class. Start out each class with a little bit of review. If you ask two questions at the beginning of every class, you're much farther ahead of the teacher that spends an hour of review before the test. Okay, so remember, the completion, test, and confirmation of the work of teaching must be made by review and application. So now we get to test the teachers. Go ahead and flip your sheets over and let's go ahead and fill them out. These are reworded slightly, so not all the words are going to be the right words that we covered. So,
teacher, you need to raise the board.
There we go.
Thank you, and that will happen. You're ready for your spelling test, and your student says, the spelling words are still up there.
Thank you. A teacher must be one who
knows
the lesson or truth to be taught. A learner is one who attends with interest to the lesson given. The language used as a medium between the teacher and learner must be
common
to both. The lesson to be learned,
did
y'all hear that? Must be explicable in terms of truth already known by the learner, and students will love when you let something slip. And that they're going to remember that too.
Yeah. May we write talk?
I'm sorry?
May we write talk?
Lesson to be taught. Learned. I think both could fit in there. Thank you. Thanks for thinking outside the box. Teaching is
exciting.
That's close. Does yours start with an A there?
Amusing. A is not a separate word, it's part of the answer.
A is the beginning of the word there. That was a good guess, though. It has to do with when we wiggled the bottle. All of a sudden, everybody...
Art?
Close. The next letter is R.
Hey, somebody added over here.
I'm sorry?
Okay.
Not quite. Starts with A-R-O.
Arousing.
Yeah. Teaching is arousing and using the pupil's mind to form in it a desired concept or thought. Learning is
thinking
into one's own understanding a new idea or truth. If a student comes up and asks you a question, what is this answer? A bad teacher will say this. Right here you go. But a good teacher will say, well, what do you think? Like Jonah said. Ready for the last one. The test and proof of teaching done must be a Viewing. Rethinking. Am I right in saying a consonant blend?
Silent.
It's a silent, yes. Knowing. A re-knowing. Close. Don't think I heard it yet. You grow these out in the field.
Onions?
And it starts with P-R. You drive by the field and you say there's a bunch of what out there? Produce. Reproducing. And the last one, That would be a good one, but that's not what I have for us. That would be a... These are all really good answers.
Firm. Close.
That would be very close.
Reapplying
is what I had. All those were actually really excellent, and those could have fit in here as well. So, hopefully that was just a little example of what a review could look like with you and your students. Remember to review. So, go ahead and apply these laws to your teaching and watch what happens. God be with you all. Thanks for being here. You all are dismissed.